Hello, this is John Ivy from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Boys Life magazine. And our first article is entitled Smooth Sailing and has a big picture here of a sailboat and a young man who's doing some snorkeling. The caption, a group of land-loving scouts from Minnesota is transformed into real water boys after 1 week of Florida sea base. The scouts of Troop 303 in Chanhassen, Minnesota, used to be what sailors would call land lovers. That is, people unfamiliar with the sea or sailing. That was before sea base. Now you could call them seal lovers, if there were such a word. No matter how you say it, spending a week sailing the open seas with the Coral Reef Sailing Program at the BSA's Florida National High Adventure Sea Base will make a sailor out of anybody. During this week of high adventure off the Florida Keys, scouts eat, sleep, and play on a 45-foot vessel. It is truly their home for 5 days. It was an interesting experience having your house moving all the time, says Mitch Kress, a 15-year-old life scout. It's kind of a different feeling. It's one of the greatest things you can do in scouting. Now, this is not a vacation on a cruise ship. Scouts are expected to do their duties on these ships, including hoisting and lowering the sails, raising and lowering the anchor, cooking, cleaning, and generally keeping all of their gear organized. You have to work together, Mitch says. Teamwork is the key. There are just tasks that you have to get done. Just as in real life, once the work is done, it's time to play. Coral Reef Sailing Adventures can choose to emphasize any of a variety of activities. There's no destination. The vessels more or less go where the breeze takes them. High adventure at sea. Some scouts come to sea base to go fishing or learn to scuba dive. Itineraries are flexible and can change, literally, with the wind. Troop 303 came to sail and snorkel. Some of the scouts had sailed on small ships at the lake in their nearby scout camp. But none of them had experienced anything like this. It's a lot of hard work to hoist a sail, says Ben Vandenbroek, a 15-year-old life scout. It's a lot bigger than it looks from a distance. It took about 3 people for us to do it. With the sail raised, the crew headed to a snorkeling hotspot chosen by the captain of the vessel. With names like Alligator Reef and Indian Key, how can you go wrong? Armed only with masks, snorkels, fins, and life jackets, the scouts poured into Florida Bay in search of underwater adventure. It was amazing, says 15-year-old Star Scout David Holmstadt, just seeing all the wildlife down there and being right there with them. Snorkeling is one of those activities that's hard to describe to anyone who hasn't done it. Trust us on this. If you've only swum around the surface of a pool or lake with a mask on, you might kind of get the idea. But you haven't truly snorkeled until you snorkeled in the ocean. It's definitely much brighter and more colorful, Mitch says. There is tons more life. Lots of work, lots of play. Another sign the scouts weren't in Minnesota anymore, seasickness. Nearly everyone got queasy and some even threw up. We won't name names. Nothing a little motion sickness medicine couldn't cure. Everybody took their pills, Ben says. They helped a lot. You also had to stay hydrated. Daytime temperatures there creep into the 90s. It's hot and sunny almost all day, every day. That's a good thing for sailing, but it also requires you to drink more water. And don't forget the sunscreen. My entire back got sunburned the first day, Mitch says. It made sleeping really hard. Most participants choose to sleep outside on the deck of the boat. The hard plastic surface isn't so bad when you throw a few blankets down. Maybe I tired myself out enough during the day that it was easy to sleep, says Ben. You could hear the waves crashing against the side of the boat. The boat was rocking back and forth a little bit, and you could see the stars really well. But they can't get too comfy. 2 scouts at a time are required to stand watch in 2-hour shifts throughout the night to make sure their anchored vessel doesn't begin to drift away and to make sure their other vessels don't drift too close. When they weren't sleeping or snorkeling, the scouts from Troop 303 were planning their next meal, or learning the ropes on the massive sailboat. They learned the same navigation skills the captain used to plot their next course, and some even got to steer the vessel. By the end of the trip, the guy didn't need any instruction. everyone worked together as a team, and it was smooth sailing, literally from there to the end. Not bad for a bunch of landlubbers from Minnesota. And it has some great pictures where it shows the boys who are on the boat and are actually taking turns steering. And then just below that picture, there's an instructor showing about the how to snorkel and how to put their fins on. And then on page 21, it has them on the sailboat. It looks like their work is done, and they're just kind of relaxing on the boat. Well, let's go to a next feature called Letters to Pedro. This is when you young people write in to Pedro, and he actually answers you. Here's our first letter from Gus Osemitz from Charlottesville, Virginia. He asked, "Hey, Pedro, I think you would make a great web application. You should also make two smaller magazines each month so I don't read this one in a day." Pedro writes back, "The boss says if I don't get to work, I'll need to start making a great job application, Gus. I read the magazine several times a month, but my memory isn't the best." Then Samantha B. from Grand Rapids, Michigan, she writes, "Hey, Pedro, I've read Boy's Life ever since my brother became a scout. My favorite part is the jokes. My brother hasn't read the last issue yet, but I'll find time to take it back to his room and hide it. I got the idea from Kara T., who wrote to you." Pedro writes back, "We'll only print your last name, Samantha, so your brother won't get wise." From Benjamin Burke in Flower Mound, Texas, "Dear Pedro, I love the Pets Note Dog's Eye View in September. Every time I try to get my dog to watch a television show, she looks confused. I never knew dogs had such quick eyes." Pedro writes back, "Just like the boss, Benjamin, that guy sees everything, but sometimes he looks confused too." Then Kyle Nabecker from Las Vegas, Nevada, he writes, "Dear Pedro, one of my favorite features is Bible heroes. How did you come up with that idea?" Pedro writes back, "Heroes are popular, Kyle. A True Story of Scouts in Action is our most popular feature. The feature is now titled Bible Stories, but the stories feature heroes as part of one big story." And then there's Moises Gagliardi from Apple Valley, Minnesota. "Dear Pedro, is there any way that scouts can earn merit badges through you? Also, are the jokes really written by kids, or do you write them?" Pedro writes back, "They don't offer merit badges for eating or sleeping, Moises, so I can't help you out. Of course, our readers write the jokes. I just hee-haw at them. Send us your best ones at the address below or through boyslife.org. What? Oh, right, boss. You can also find every single merit badge requirement on our website, Moises." And Everett Barton from Valencia, California writes, "Dear Pedro, I liked your article on picking the perfect backpack. Carry on in May. I have gone backpacking a couple of times. I had to bring a lot of water. What backpack do you like best?" Pedro writes back, "The one I don't have to carry, Everett. I've toted a lot of backpacks in my day, and now I get to lug around this mailbag." And finally, Caleb Haynes from Hickory, North Carolina writes, "Dear Purely Awesome, all-ruling, totally better than the boss, Pedro. I love the October article, En Garde. I think you should be the boss, so cut yourself some slack and make yourself a mouth-watering tumbleweed taco." And Pedro writes back, "If this gets in print, I'll be surprised, Caleb. Alas, I'm not the boss. The boss is the boss. He says I'm a second-rate hoss who needs to floss just gathering moss. I'm such a loss, he needs to toss. Okay. Boss man, he's touchy. He says if I quit the stupid rhymes, he'll print this letter. I think I'll go get that taco now. See you next month." That was Letters from Pedro. Now let's learn about a few of our scouts. I'm going to turn here to page 14, Boys Live Headliners. And we're going to start with a young man, Clay Wilkins, and has a picture of Clay as the Triumph Teen Triathlete, and it has him showing some of his events, which include cycling, running, and swimming. Let's find out about Clay. Well, Clay Wilkins. He was born January 27, 1995. His hometown was Perron, Arkansas. He made headlines when he won the 2009 USA Triathlon Youth National Championship from the boys 13 to 15 division with a time of 32 minutes 54 seconds for the race that comprises a 200-meter swim, a 10-kilometer bicycle ride, and a 2-kilometer run. Ready, set, go. This former Cub Scout is aiming for the Olympics. His race day strategy is simple. I focus on who's in front of me, and I just keep moving up until I pass him. Off-the-track interests, hunting, basketball, chess, and boating. His achievements include being selected for the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth and the University of Arkansas Gifted and Talented Scholar Program and receiving a letter of merit recognition from President Obama. The future, his career possibilities include radiology, coaching, or becoming a race director. And advice for you, whatever you like doing, stay with it. You can only get better the more you practice. And on the next page, we'll learn about Arjun Kandaswamy. Where in the world is the Scout geography expert? Well, as we said, his name is Arjun Kandaswamy. He was born February 15, 1995. His hometown is Beaverton, Oregon. His Scout rank, Life Scout, Troop 208 in Beaverton. He made headlines when he placed second in a 2009 National Geographic B and won a $15,000 scholarship. The scoop, Arjun got interested in geography because his father travels a lot and tells him about places he visits. My parents and teachers kept me going when I had trouble getting past my school champion, the two-time state winner. With their help, I stayed hungry for a win. The toughest B question. Timmins County shares its name with a tributary of the Danube River and is located in the western part of what country? The answer? Romania. Other interests. Basketball, tennis, running, snowboarding, mountain biking, and playing the guitar. The future for Arjun? I want to become a lawyer, and I might get involved in politics. And his advice for us is, things will be a lot harder than they first look, and you might feel discouraged. But keep trying and working hard. Don't be too hard on yourself. With perseverance and support from those close to you, anything is possible. And finally, we have Greg Hummel Jr., and has a picture of him, good call, winning with wildlife calling. Now, Greg Hummel Jr., his age is 14, his hometown, Belmont, California. He made headlines by becoming the only person ever to win world titles in reed, duck and goose, diaphragm, elk and turkey, and voice, elk calling. Greg now has 6 world elk bugling titles and 4 world waterfowl calling titles. His most recent victories, 2008 Junior World Duck Calling Contest and 2009 World Elk Calling Championship in the voice category and the Real Duck Junior Snow Goose and Junior Speckled Belly Goose World Championships. His true calling, the former Cub Scout entered a calling contest at a sportsman's exposition when he was 6. He practiced for an hour on a duck calling device and won. Now Greg practices an hour almost every day. His tools? Plastic tubes, reeds, and other devices are used to give calls authentic resonance. Sometimes callers use only their natural voices. The perks of calling. I like the travel, competition, getting on stage, the pressure, meeting great people, and the prizes. Between calls, Greg likes skiing, baseball, backpacking, hunting, and fishing. And the advice for us is stay focused on your goals. Put in honest effort and earn it. Ask for help and learn from others because someone else has been where you are going. And now a few news and notes, pages 8 and 9. Fast Facts, Antarctica. Winter is almost over, but it's always cold at the bottom of the world. The Antarctic ice cap contains 7 million cubic miles of ice, which represents about 90% of all ice on Earth. In 1911, Norwegian Roald Amundsen and his 5-man team became the first expedition to reach the South Pole. Antarctica's Adelaide penguins might be small in size, but they're big on attitude. They've been known to attack inquisitive scientists with their flippers. The annual Antarctic Ice Marathon is the only marathon run in Antarctica's interior. The course covers 26.2 miles of snow and ice. Rain is a rarity in Antarctica. The reasons? First, it's just too cold. Second, Antarctica is technically a desert and gets very little snowfall. Finally, the average summer temperature at the South Pole is minus 17.5 degrees Fahrenheit, while the average winter temperature is minus 76. Get Game Smart. Do your parents worry about the time you spend playing video games? Eagle Scout Alexander Cruz, 14, from Bellevue, Washington, wants to help. Microsoft chose Alexander as one of its first Get Smart ambassadors. Alexander and 9 other teens have teamed up with parents to offer advice on safe and healthy gaming at GameGetSmart.com. He recommends time for families to play together and limits on game use. Alexander and his mom joined the ambassador program after posting a winning rap video on the site. They rapped about balancing Xbox game time with physical activity and homework. Take the family challenge at boyslife.org/links/getgamesmart. Bionic animals. Humans receive artificial limbs every day, but animals can also get a lift from new technology. Beauty, a bald eagle, suffered a shotgun blast to the beak. Engineers, veterinarians, and raptor biologists successfully built and attached a plastic prototype beak. Experts will wait to see if her beak regrows a small amount before attaching a final plastic version. Beauty now educates others, teaching them that it is illegal to shoot any bird of prey. A sea turtle named Allison lost 3 flippers in a shark attack. Rescuers' attempts to attach plastic flippers failed, so a special ninja jacket was developed with a long fin that helps Allison dive and swim with ease. Winter. A bottlenose dolphin lost tail circulation while caught in a crab trap. Her tail fell off in pieces during the following months, so the Clearwater Marine Aquarium fitted her with a new plastic tail. Winter learned to swim all over again, and she now serves as an inspiration to children with disabilities. Super Sub. A sleek new submarine looks like a futuristic spacecraft and dives to as deep as 1,000 feet. The Super Falcon submersible uses a pressurized hull with 2 cockpits, dual flight controls, and an instrumentation system that would make a military pilot drool. The Super Falcon can descend as fast as 200 feet per minute and ascend at twice that speed. The sub always maintains cabin pressure, so passengers don't have to worry about getting the bends, a depressurization illness that causes painful bubbles to form inside the body. Super Falcon pilots can barrel roll alongside dolphins or explore sunken treasure ships for up to 5 hours. The sub will also be used to help promote marine conservation. That's a few fast facts. What about the Mongolia's legendary worm? As if blasting sandstorms and harsh temperatures weren't enough, the Gobi Desert holds another extreme danger, the mysterious Mongolian death worm. Eyewitnesses say the 2 to 5 foot long worm can take down a grown man or a camel in a single strike. 2 weapons give it the ability to kill instantly from several feet away. The worm shoots electric sparks and spits venom so acidic it corrodes metal. Although many claim to have encountered the legendary creature, no photos or specimens have been captured. For more than 100 years, people have searched for proof the elusive death worm exists. Cryptozoologists such as David Ferrier study strange creatures like Scotland's Loch Ness Monster and Thailand's Naga, a 60-foot-long cave-dwelling serpent. Ferrier and his team mounted an expedition in August 2009, combing the Gobi and southern Mongolia for evidence of the death worm. They plan to put together a documentary, keeping their findings secret for now. Now, the rebuilding years. In rebuilding years, we're going to talk about trees. Whether you're helping regrow a forest or just sprucing up the neighborhood, planting a tree is a great way to make a long-lasting impact. Forest fires aren't always bad. Prescribed burns are planned and conducted by forest managers to stimulate the growth of desirable vegetation or to eliminate dead plant matter that could eventually provide the fuel for a larger, more dangerous wildfire. Wildfires are the ones that aren't prescribed and aren't as easily controlled. They can damage thousands of acres of forest and can even creep into nearby neighborhoods and destroy homes. Super intense wildfires can damage the soil, robbing it of its ability to absorb water. The next time it rains, water instead of rain runs off into rivers and streams and can eventually cause flooding. Forest managers, sometimes with the help of a local Boy Scout troop, try to prevent the spread of wildfires by planting native trees and other plants that serve as a firebreak. This low-fuel vegetation can slow down wildfires and protect nearby communities. Sometimes forest managers will help a forest regrow after a wildfire by simply planting new trees. Now, it's not as easy as planting a flower in a pot in your home. Trees should be planted correctly to increase the chances of them growing into a hardy plant that can maybe even withstand the next fire. 9 out of 10 forest fires are caused by people who are careless. Always practice the leave-no-trace principles for minimizing campfire impacts. Use a camp stove for cooking. If campfires are permitted, use only established fire rings. Keep fires small by using only sticks from the ground that can be broken by hand. Burn all wood to ash, making sure the spot is cold before you leave. Scouts whose troops choose next month's suggested program's theme, forestry, will come to understand and appreciate the importance of protecting forests, one of our most valuable natural resources. It has a picture here of some scouts actually doing some planting in the forest. And planting the seeds, whether you do it in a local park or in the middle of a damaged forest, planting a tree is a great way to help the community and the environment. Planting techniques will differ depending on factors such as soil type, slope, the type of tree, and the type of time of year, but these steps should give you a general idea of what you'll be in for. Talk with forest managers in your area to find out what services they need. Number one, carry a big shovel. In areas such as the Pacific Northwest, young trees must be planted in such a way that they can survive in a stressful environment. In kinder, gentler environments, smaller seedlings with small shovels turn out fine. Otherwise, use a large shovel and large, vigorous seedlings. Number two, crack open a hole in the ground. When dealing with seedlings, don't worry about shoveling out dirt. It takes too much time. Instead, jam the shovel into the ground at an angle, then push the handle away from your body, creating a crack in the ground. And number three, drop the seedling into the hole. Make sure the hole is the right depth. Seedlings planted too deep will struggle, as will those planted too shallow. Talk to a local tree expert about proper planting depth. And finally, number four, remove the shovel and fill the hole, and then repeat. Experienced tree planters can plant dozens of seedlings in just an hour or two using this technique. That's how you reseed a forest. And it has pictures showing each one of the four descriptions that we just mentioned. And finally, we'll go to Think and Grin. And yes, you guessed it. These are the jokes that you, the writers, have written in. And these are Pedro's picks. Our first one is from John Melgren from Central Point, Oregon. He says, John, what do you call someone who snores? And Frank, beats me, John, a sound sleeper. From Jacob Pila in Fenton, Missouri. Jacob, what will the dentist give you for a dollar? Will, I haven't a clue. Jacob, buck teeth. From Matthew Cordigiani from Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Austin, why do drills have no friends? Anthony, why? Austin, because they're always boring. Okay. From John Melgren from Central Point, Oregon. John, what did the wind say to the screen? Ben, tell me. John, just passing through. And Luke? And David Levan from Hicksville, New York. Luke, why did the boy start a gardening service? Dave, why? He wanted to rake in some cash. Okay. From Eric Grenier in Bufton, South Carolina. Bob, why was the cap arrested? Joe, I don't know. Bob, it was covering for the marker. Oh, boy. All right. From Ryan Warwick, Fort White, Florida. Ryan, what do you get when you cross a game console and a fighter? Eric, I don't know. Ryan, an ex-boxer. All right. From Noah Hastings from Madison, Connecticut. Noah, what do you call an alien that lives in a bog? Caleb, I have no idea. What? Noah, a marsh inn. All right. From Thomas Kerrigan from Basking Ridge, New Jersey. Thomas, what is a golfer's favorite lunch? Charlie, beats me. A ham sandwich. And from Ian Hartley, Novato, California. Ian, what did Oliver Twist say on a campout? Charles, I don't know. Ian, please, sir, may I have some more? And from Nathaniel Rouse in Glendale, Wisconsin. Nate, why was school easier for cave people? Kate, why? Nate, because there was no history to study. Right. Heli Nguyen from East Hartford, Connecticut. Heli, why did the annoying exterminator lose his job? Eddie, why? Heli, he bugged his boss. From Richard Duffis from Granville, Ohio. Rich, why do they put fences around graveyards? Mitch, tell me. Because people are dying to get in. Oh, boy. And from Marcel Marchand, Orange, California. Teacher, how do you find a square root? Doug, that's easy. Just look for a square vegetable. That was good. And from Max Johansson, Norcross, Georgia. Finally, a man told his lawyer, I'd like to make a will, but I don't know how. The lawyer answered, oh, that's okay. Just leave it to all to me. Well, those were Pedro's picks from Think and Grin. We have run out of time. We have run out of time for today's episode of Boy's Life. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivy, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long, till next time.